So, hello and welcome to Europe in My Backyard. I'm Paula Wiseman, and over the course of this series, we're going to be hearing about the many ways in which the European cohesion policy impacts us all on our daily lives. So today, I'm lucky enough to be going to be chatting with the Green MEP for Dublin, Kieran Cuff. And then in the second half of the show, I'll be chatting with the CEO of Codema, Donna Gartland. So let's start off with Kieran Cuff. The Green MEP for Dublin. So hi, Kieran, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's lovely to be here.
So let's start off by talking about cohesion policy. I mean, why do you think this is such an important thing?
Well, I guess if we go back to the big question of why does the European Union exist? And one of the big reasons we joined 50 years ago was because it would give us help in developing. And back then it was an economic union and the focus was on economic activity, building the infrastructure, the sewers, the programmes, the roads, the public transport, the infrastructure we needed to be a modern European state. Now, in those 50 years, the European Union has evolved to have both a social and an environmental focus, which is amazing and a huge step in the right direction. And cohesion policy is there to help the underperforming member states reach the level of development that the rest of the EU has. And you know, for Ireland, it's been a success story. The income per capita compared to other countries is higher than average. And yet there are many countries around Europe, whether it be Hungary or Slovenia or Croatia, they want to develop. They want to develop in the right direction. And the cohesion funds are there to help them out and help them achieve it.
Yeah, I suppose it's trying to achieve balance, isn't it? It's a club, I suppose, at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, in the same way as in Ireland, we look at counties that are maybe poorer than others, and the richer counties help. So if you take actually Greater Dublin, a huge amount of the tax raised in Dublin is going to help counties that are maybe less fortunate than we are. It's to help invest in the kind of projects that are needed. It could be greenways, it could be motorways, it could be improved bus services. That's what we do at a national level, but within the European Union of 450 million, it's what we try and do around the European Union. And I guess the big push at the moment is to help the Central European countries, the Eastern European countries, to develop. And you know what? There's a queue of other countries at the door. I was down in Albania a month ago, and they are dying to be in the European Union. They, North Macedonia, and a host of countries in the Western Balkans, they've seen what Europe can do for you and they want to be part of the club.
Yeah. So can we talk a little bit about how Ireland benefits from all these EU funds? What do we get from it?
Well, I guess looking to the past, what we've got from it is improvements in infrastructure, and that could be water supply, sewage, it could be transport. Clearly, historically, a huge amount of the money went into motorways and roads.
Yeah.
Too much, actually, from my perspective as a Green. But in recent years, we're starting to put a lot more money into both public transport and active travel. And you know what? We have to do that anyway, because we have climate goals that we have to meet, and that's where we can align our environmental policies with our development or cohesion policies. And in the last few years, we've seen the emergence of the Just Transition Fund around Europe to help, let's say, the coal regions where we're trying to push them away from coal, and we have to offer them carrots as well as sticks. And some of that money is going into training. It's going into reskilling. So instead of digging out coal, maybe you are insulating a house. And here in Ireland, in the Midlands, clearly we're moving away from harvesting turf. It's been in the headlines over the last week. But we want to give people meaningful, good, well-paid jobs. It could be in wind energy. It could be in retrofitting homes. It could be in tourism. So that's where cohesion policy will be bringing Ireland over the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I suppose people think, oh, it's just all they're doing is building new roads. And, you know, that's where all the money's going, roads and bridges and all this kind of stuff. But obviously, there's a lot more, as you say, there's upskilling going on and training. behind all this.
I mean, we talk about a social Europe, an inclusive Europe. So that can be about training programs. It can be about education and skills development in parts of Ireland where you have very high levels of unemployment. It can be about giving people the skills that they need to get back into the marketplace, or if they've never been there, to give them the skills to find a job, or increasingly to create a job. I think when I was in school 30 years ago, it was all about giving you the skills to find a job. But I think now we're much more focused on, well, you could be the person who creates that job in the first instance. So there's a lot of small and medium-sized enterprises, and I think everybody has an idea at the back of their head that could provide a job for themselves or others. And I think we want to make sure that somebody is given the help, the mentoring to do that. So bodies like Inner City Enterprise in Dublin, which I'd be familiar with, they would be helping people to do that, and historically they would have received cohesion funds. Now, as Ireland develops, we're moving away from cohesion funding per se. It's more about alignment with cohesion policy. So the kind of the broad goals of what are we trying to achieve with this money? I mean, years ago it was just build the damn roads. But today it's about a greener Europe, a low carbon Europe. It's about a competitive and smarter Europe. A lot of buzzwords, but what do we mean by smarter? Things like being able to renew your driving licence online, so you don't have to queue for an hour in an offices down on Chancery Street. That's what a smarter Europe is to me. It's about having an app on the phone. When I was hopping on the 27 bus to come out here today, it was about being able to use the app to tell you the bus is leaving in 5 minutes from just outside Bessaris. That to me is a smarter Europe. We almost take it for granted now here in Ireland. But for, I tell you, I mean, I spend a lot of my time in Brussels and in Strasbourg. And there's parts of Europe where the internet, shall we say, is has a bit of a ways to go. And I know, look, there's people in rural Ireland who are waiting for broadband and will continue to be waiting for years. But just this kind of seamless society that can use the internet to do an awful lot of their daily tasks. That's what a smarter Europe is all about. So that's part of a cohesion policy. We also talk about, a Europe that is closer to citizens. A lot of people feel very disenfranchised. You know, what does the council do for me? What does the government do for me? So how do we, for instance, get teenage girls interested in what's going on in where money is spent? Is there a place where they can hang out? And is the government or is the European Union helping them to achieve that? Or let's say you're in your 70s and you'd like to have a swimming pool beside you. Again, cohesion policy can deliver. I know I'm making it sound like it can deliver all of these stuff at the with the magic wand. It can't do that. So a lot of this stuff is aspirational. But I think just moving away from the kind of the middle-aged grey-haired men like myself and thinking about, you know, asking other people what do they want from society. And that could be immigrant groups. It could be people of colour. It could be any groups who are traditionally underrepresented. And when I look around the European Parliament, I see a lot of people like me, and we have to constantly kind of check our own privilege and think about the issues that are important to us. Are they the issues that are important to most people out there?
I mean, things take time, don't they? You know what I mean? I know we're in a society now that expects things, you know, click of your fingers, things happen. Things take time, so...
They do, and recognising what priorities are. I mean, it was only when I became a dad 20 years ago, I kind of became a complete sort of monster given out about footpaths that you couldn't get a buggy up onto or somebody parked in the wrong way. So sometimes it takes a bit of a life change to recognise things. Or if you have a fall and you're using a stick or a wheelchair, you recognise that a whole lot of the environment you inhabit is not designed around the needs of somebody like yourself.
It's very true. So we talk about climate change there. I mean, what part do you think the EU funding is playing towards climate change? I mean, obviously climate change is a huge issue at the moment.
A huge amount. And we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years, councils and governments declare climate and biodiversity emergencies. And yet at the same time, so many parts of life go on as if it's business as usual. So the good news is that the European Union, shortly after I was elected 3 years ago, or almost 3 years ago, said, look, we're going to have the Fit for 55 package. Essentially, this is about halving the amount of greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. 2030 compared to 2090. 55% reduction. Mm. That's great news. How do you do that? Well, you use European money to deliver on that. So within the Fit for 55 package, we have about 16 draft laws that are slowly making their way through the Parliament. There's two that I'm really focused on. The first one is the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive, where I'm what they call the rapporteur. I'm the person in the Parliament who's trying to bring everybody together and deliver on how do we get all our homes to an A energy rating by 2050. We can't do it overnight, but the kind of grants you've seen announced recently in Ireland and the kind of policies we're doing in Europe, the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive, will push us to bring the amount of energy we use in buildings down to almost zero over the next 30 years. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
But there's another 15 pieces of legislation. Another piece is what we call the Sustainable Aviation Fuels Directive. An awful lot of people fly, and they fly a lot. And Ireland being an island off an island, you could argue that we need to fly. So how can we take the kerosene that is responsible for a huge amount of greenhouse gas emissions, 4.2%, if you actually take the what we call the non-CO2 effects, the knock-on effects of aviation, it's about 10-12% of greenhouse gas emissions.
Wow.
So we need to move away from burning kerosene. What are the alternatives? Biofuels, great, but not so great, because we don't want to compete with land for food, with land for fuel. So biofuels will play a little bit of a part. But we're also looking at something called synthetic aviation fuels and eventually hydrogen and electricity. This is kind of rocket science stuff. It's not easy. A lot of it has been done in test tubes at the moment.
Yeah.
But the European Union is providing the money to look at new types of ways of moving aeroplanes around that are not as bad for the planet. So all of these files are the Fit for 55 package. Mm-hmm. And we hope by the end of our five-year term, our five-year mandate, to have approved all of these laws, and they will hopefully within the next 8 years have reduced our greenhouse gas emissions considerably.
Yeah.
That's all a bit theoretical. I suppose insulating your house, that's a very simple thing. We all know why we have a lagging jacket around the hot water cylinder.
Mm.
But the move towards electric cars, we want to see that happen, but we want to see it happen at a price that people can afford if they have to drive. Electric cars are currently fairly expensive.
Mm.
But you know what? Most people are buying fairly expensive cars anyway. So this argument that we can't have electric cars because they're too expensive, when you look at somebody buying a car for 20, 30, 40,000, I mean, there's new electric cars coming in at 25, 26 grand.
Yeah.
Sure, if you want to buy a bog standard Ford Fiesta, it's maybe 17 grand. But over the next few years, the electric car prices will come down, and they're better for the planet, but they're also better for the local air pollution. And living in the city centre, I'm well aware of this. I have asthma. One of my kids has asthma. We want to try and improve the local air quality, because that kills 1,300 people per year in Ireland. And in this whole row about so-called ban on turf, but the reason we're kind of moving to cleaner fuels is it improves the air quality. And we all know somebody who's using a blue inhaler. We want to move people away from that. We want to give people healthier, longer lives, whether it's children or older people. And the move away from commercial turf extraction, the move away from dirty coal. We've been trying to do this stuff for 30 years. We need to move further and faster to get it right. What the European Union is trying to do is to help member states, help countries develop in a sustainable way that helps bring jobs, bring improved quality of life, bring clean air, clean water, clean food to the majority of people. And that is something I think we need to do a lot more of in the years ahead. So I remember the head of the European Environment Agency, he said, look, this was when Brexit was going off and it was going on and we were all scratching our heads. And he said, look, the big issues of our time, globalization, migration, climate change, and more recently kind of COVID and other issues, they require cooperation across boundaries. We can't just go back to being 20 member states. Imagine if we tried to find a COVID vaccine with each of the 27 countries going it alone. I mean, European Union money helped bring about a vaccine and it helped roll out that vaccine across 27 countries. The UK went it alone. Yes, they delivered a vaccine earlier, but if everybody had gone down that road, I think it would have been survival of the fittest.
Definitely.
And that's where I think we should be a little bit proud of Europe. Of course, we want to roll out the vaccine to the developing world, and we are doing that, but we need to do more of that. But I think working together as a union is helping to achieve that.
Yeah, and thanks so much for coming in and talking to me today, Kieran. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
So, so now I'm lucky enough to be joined in the studio by Donna Gartland, the CEO of Codema. So hi, Donna. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
No worries at all. Thanks for coming in. So do you want to maybe start off by, for anyone that hasn't heard of Codema before, do you want to tell us a little bit about what you do as an organisation?
Yeah, sure. So Codema is Dublin's energy agency. So we were set up back in 1997 and actually under a European project to set up energy agencies across Europe. So we're a success story of European funding, let's say. We're still going 20-odd years later. So we're a not-for-profit company limited by guarantee, which means we have no shareholders and we're completely independent advisors. And we work directly with the four Dublin local authorities. So that's with South Dublin, Fingal, Dunleary, Rathdown and Dublin City Councils. So we work on their behalf and our mission is to drive and accelerate the Dublin's low carbon transition on behalf of, I suppose, the citizens of Dublin in order to make it a better place to live in.
Yeah.
And also, I suppose, our mantra is, you know, think global, act local. And that's really what we do.
Yeah, I mean, as I was saying to you earlier, you're very young to be a CEO. You know, we normally think of CEOs as being these men in their 70s. I mean, you know, you're very young, and obviously that kind of brings to, you know, organisations in today's society.
Yeah, well, obviously the anti-wrinkle cream is working, but I suppose a lot of our staff will be, I suppose, yeah, are younger now, and you know, a lot of the new recruits, new graduates we're bringing in are all, you know, all in their 20s, early 30s, and I suppose, you know, climate action, I suppose, really aligns with their values, and it means a lot to them, and it's kind of where they see where they want to have an impact, and I think more and more people now are looking to either switch into their careers to something that means something more to them and aligns with those values.
Yeah. I mean, so can you tell us about some of these amazing projects? I mean, I've been looking at your website and stuff. Can you tell us about some of the projects that you've had funded through this EU money?
Yes. Yeah. So we've been very successful and very lucky to have drawn down multiple times from European funds. As I mentioned, we were originally set up under a European project, and at the moment about half of our funding comes in through European projects. So if you can imagine, you know, we're staff of just under 20 staff at the moment. You know, we wouldn't have half of those staff now if we didn't have European funding, and we definitely wouldn't have survived this long, you know, 20 odd years without the European funding support. So it's really key and really core to what we do. So our innovation, our ideas, you know, our cooperation with peers across Europe is really core to our ability to deliver new services in Dublin and bring that kind of innovation to Dublin. So some of the successes, for example, we worked on a project called ACE, and from that project, that allowed us to develop what are called home energy saving kits.
Right.
And these are available in all the local authority libraries across Dublin, and they actually became so successful that they're being spread out across Ireland. So we have these basically home energy toolkits in libraries across Ireland now that you can rent. So any citizen can go and borrow this in their library, and it gives them lots of information on how to check for drafts and, you know, where they could improve their energy efficiency in their home and where they could save money, which is obviously a key topic at the moment. You know, it's very, very relevant at the moment, and that toolkit won an award for the best sustainable energy project at a European level. So it was really well renowned, and that all of that came from our ability to develop that toolkit and to deliver it across the local authorities in Dublin was all through that ACE, that European project, and we got them funding from SEAI later on to kind of roll it out further. So that was just one, I suppose, one of the big projects. We've a few other kind of ongoing and have just finished up. So there's different calls in Europe that we'd be involved in. There's like a call called Horizon 2020. Uh-huh. And then there's an Interreg, another European funding call called Interreg. And in the Interreg project funding call, it's a call called Northwest Europe. And uh-huh. we worked with different partners across Northwest Europe. We led the project called HeatNet.
Yeah.
And that was about delivering district heating systems in these pilot regions across Europe. We worked with colleagues in the UK, in Portsmouth, right. and in Aberdeen, and in Cortric and Herlaine. And we all worked on developing pilot schemes. And the one in Dublin is in Tala, and some of your listeners might have heard of it. It's a district heating network. It's going to be the first in Ireland. So, and it's going to be the first not-for-profit energy utility in Ireland.
Wow.
So South Dublin County Council were a key partner with us in that project, and they really wanted to be a leader in this area. So we're taking the waste heat from a data centre in Tala, and we're going to we've built an energy centre, and we're going to deliver that waste heat to buildings in the Tala area. So that takes them off gas, takes them off fossil fuels,
yeah.
Which is obviously a big issue at the moment,
yeah, exactly.
You know, rising gas costs. Everybody wants to look for some alternative, as
yeah.
well as the low carbon credentials of using waste heat. So it's bringing these kind of innovative new concepts that we've learned. I mean, the reason why we knew how to do that is because we were working with those partners across
exactly.
Europe. We went over, we had a look, we saw what they were doing. We said, why aren't we doing this in Ireland? You know, and that's, I suppose, our approach to all the projects we do is we go and we see what's happening across Europe and say, how can we do this? How can we apply this in Ireland? How can we become leaders? How can we follow this best practice? So that's just some examples of some of the European funding that we've been involved in. We have another couple of projects on at the moment, one called Delivery, which is like Deliveroo, but instead of delivering your takeaway, it delivers energy efficiency instead.
Wow.
So that is going to develop a kind of a project implementation unit where we can bundle lots of buildings together.
Right, right.
So it's trying, you know, at the moment everyone's trying to do it in their thing individually, every
yeah.
business, every household,
yeah.
you know, and it's very hard to do when you're on your own. So what we're going to do is bundle a lot of buildings together and bring that to market so that we can have them upgraded to very high efficiency levels and make sure that they do reduce CO2 over time.
Yeah.
So that's just some of the examples that we're working on at the moment.
Wow. I mean, how beneficial would you say EU funding has been to you as an organisation? I mean, could you function without this money?
We could, but to a much, much, much lesser level, you know. We are part funded, like the local authorities give us core funding to
yeah,
work
yeah.
on a lot of their projects and help them lower their own energy efficiency. But in terms of, you know, local authorities' own resources are limited. You know, they have other things that they need to spend money on, homelessness, you know, other services, etc. So I suppose in order for us to kind of push the boundaries forward to kind of do these kind of pilot projects, this innovation, and to, you know, for us to employ, as I said, like, you know, half our staff, you know, the rest of our staff, you know, this European funding is 100% key to us, and
yeah.
without it we wouldn't exist. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so how many people have you got in Codema at the moment? Are you a large organisation?
We're 19 at the moment, which is, I suppose, a small to medium enterprise.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're looking to expand. I mean, we did start off with just a couple of handful of staff, you know, so we've kind of expanded a lot in the last couple of years. And, you know, as you know yourself, you know, the push and the drive for climate action has really gone up in the last few years, so that we see our services increasing at a similar rate.
Mm.
And, you know, it's just trying to keep up with that, like, you know, keep up with the demand. We, as I said, we really want to drive the delivery of low carbon transition in Dublin. We want Dublin to be the Copenhagen, the Stockholm,
yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? All these kind of green cities that you hear of across Europe, like, why can't we be that,
exactly.
you know? And I suppose that's really our aspiration, you know? So the European funding, that European connection is key to us. And that's what really attracts a lot of the staff that we have as well, because they know that they get to, you know, it's not just like a local thing, you know, I mean, they get to go on trip, you know, we're going to Rotterdam next week, for example. I know the COVID put a dent in our travel plans for
yeah,
a long
yeah.
time, but, you know, there is a lot to be learned by going over and seeing things and
yeah.
sitting down in the room with, you know, with your peers from other cities, see what they're doing and have them explain to you exactly how they got over those barriers, you know, and how we can do something similar.
Yeah, I suppose it's all about sharing knowledge, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? There's no point kind of keeping something to yourself, this kind of top secret
yes.
way of heating buildings and stuff. It's nice that you can, you know, you can integrate with these other countries that have different ways of doing it. And there's this shared knowledge between all the different EU countries.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, there's, you know, there's lots of other not-for-profits, lots of councils, lots of other public sector bodies that we work with, as you say, that are very open. And, you know, the good thing about the European funding and the structures is, you know, everything that we do through that has to be made public as well. Mm. Like, you yeah, know, yeah. So, you know, all of our work is very transparent. You know, all of the things that we develop through the European projects are all up on our website, you know, very clear to see that. And we develop lots of guidelines. You know, a lot of the European projects, they encourage you to disseminate and to make sure that, you know, what you've learned through that European funding is not just kept in Dublin, or is not just, you know, and, you know, they really want you to make sure that there's a dissemination plan, a long-term rollout, you know, of that. And, you know, the foundations that we've built, say, for district heating or for those toolkits or for the energy performance contracting work, like, I mean, that's all laid foundations for us for work for years of work ahead, yeah, yeah, you know. Yeah. And we're helping other local authorities across Ireland do similar things, you know. So it's a really key kind of stepping stone in order to bring new ideas, new innovation into Dublin, into Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, you hear these stories on the news all the time about people having to choose whether to heat or to eat, basically. And, you know, it's great that there's, you know, organisations like yourselves that can make things a lot more affordable for people at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, that's our ambition, is to, you know, we have so many local resources that we're not using and aren't, you know, I suppose when you're only relying on, you know, there's a certain point where you have to, like, the market would deliver so much, but you do need social enterprises like ourselves to kind of step in and say, you know, is this the right thing that we're doing here? Is there something we could be doing better? And looking at it through a socioeconomic lens instead of just a cost benefit lens and a market lens, you know. So what we're trying to do is we kind of bridge that gap between, I suppose, you know, new ideas that are at a very low, like, market readiness level, and we kind of bridge that gap by doing the pilots through the European funding, and then hopefully the market will take it, we'll see that it's a real opportunity and take over then, and it'll become kind of mainstream.
Yeah, I mean, what would you like to see, you know, Dublin in the next sort of, I don't know, next few years, what would you like to see
well,
Dublin become?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think we have all the key ingredients here. Like, you know, we've mapped, we just did a big project called the Dublin Region Energy Master Plan that was funded by SEAI, and we mapped out every energy demand and every energy source in Dublin. And we can tell that we have enough, more than enough energy, renewable energy sources, low carbon sources in Dublin to meet all of our demands. You know, the key things really for Dublin are our ability to deliver offshore wind. So we have a huge offshore wind potential. We need to start moving away from, you know, single vehicle drive, you know, driving combustion engine cars with one person and driving. You know, we need to move towards more public transport. We need more better cycling infrastructure in terms of transport, and then in terms of heating, you know, a huge portion of our emissions in Dublin comes from heating.
Yeah.
So we need to make that more affordable. We need, you know, energy efficiency upgrades are expensive. So what we're trying to do is really drive down those costs and look at solutions like district heating, for example, as I said, using that waste heat that's thrown away.
Yeah. Well, thank you so, so much for coming in today, Donna. It's been, you know, it's been fantastic having you in the studio today.
Thanks so much.
Cool. So that's all from us this week. Thank you so, so much to my guests, Kieran Cuff and Donna Gartland. So you can listen again to our interviews for this series at nearfm.ie/podcast. Or you can email us at europe@near.ie.